What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Scarrett, and as always, I'm with Amy Zander. Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm well, Kevin. How are you?
Peachy. So we've done the meat and potatoes of our podcasting. We've gone through all the archetypes, and I think we've even had a little bit of bread and butter, and I think it's time for some dessert.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to this one. I think it's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
As we were doing the research for the kinds of things to talk about, I realized that we could probably make at least three or four of these things. There are so many branding fails, which is the topic of the day. Branding fails. How to not do brand.
Right.
So, as we were going through this stuff, I think we can categorize the fails into just a few groups. I think we could say that the company just took too big of a change from their past brand, which is very dangerous. They just didn't do enough research into a change or a new campaign or a new tagline or a new identity element, something like that. A third category would be they just really, really veer off the rails. They just, you know, they were pretty true to a brand strategy and then they went way 90 degrees, you know, in one direction. Not a good idea. A fourth one would be that they're just not sensitive to how the public might respond to a campaign. And the last category is, we're calling it lost in translation.
Favorite category.
I saved it to last because I think know. It's the most fun.
Oh, it is. You don't know how your words are going to look to somebody in a different language sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Words are fun.
Yeah, so let's start with changing from the past, doing too much that's different. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, the epic one, the one that everybody knows about. I think it was about 19 years ago, Coca-Cola feeling the pressure from Pepsi, and Pepsi being a jester brand and Coca-Cola being an innocent brand. Coca-Cola, they have stayed true to their strategy for over 100 years, and with this one exception, and the strong need to go up against Pepsi, they decided that they wanted to jazz it up and put a little bit of energy in, and so they created the new Coke.
Wah, wah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, too big of a change. Yeah. People felt betrayed. It was hundreds of millions of brand equity lost under the bookkeeping line item of goodwill was just lost, poof, evaporated. And there was talk that the company actually almost could have failed had they not turned around and created Coke Classic, which is how they recovered.
So right, like going back to their original brand and nostalgia and the...
That's right.
You know, all that kind of thing. But, okay, so I can't say that I can tangibly recall in my memory like what new Coke tasted like. I'm sure I tried it, but I don't remember like feeling like, ooh, this is disgusting, or I wouldn't drink it. I didn't have that strong of a reaction to it. But so that goes to show that like how much brand is really so important. You know, even if you have an okay product, if you mess up on the brand, it's just not going to go anywhere. Right?
Right. Right. Well, I think that the formulation was, they were trying to make it a little, I think how I would classify Coke versus Pepsi taste-wise, I would say that Coke has a little bit more of a kind of a drier, pepperier taste.
Yeah, Pepsi's way sweeter.
Way sweeter. Yeah. Syrup, more syrupy.
Right.
And I think that's what the new Coke formula was.
Okay.
And so, You know, and, but it really doesn't really matter, like what you just said. It's the product is the product. And I think when you compare two different products in the world, you know, cola syrup and cola syrup,
right?
they're pretty darn close to each
right.
other. So, yeah, so that's the classic one. And, you know, we got others too. So,
yeah. So another one is Tropicana, which is owned by Pepsi. Yeah. And when Pepsi wanted to modernize some of their products, including Tropicana orange juice, they kind of changed the look and feel. They removed the puffy letters of the logo for a cleaner font face, which, you know, we kind of think is a little bit more plain and boring. And they removed the iconic straw sticking out of the orange. So that was something that people were used to seeing. And they just, yeah, they didn't, not like, unlike Coke, they didn't change the taste or formula of the orange juice. They were just changing the brand itself. And the result was that the packaging looked too generic, looked like too much like everybody else. And it was like an estimated $130 million in lost sales.
Yeah, I don't remember actually hearing about it while it was happening. I heard about it after the fact.
Yeah.
But I do remember it was a big gaffe. And when you look at that packaging, all you have to do is, you know, just do a Google search for Tropicana. You know, I think this was about 9 or 10 years ago, but it really does look like generic packaging.
Right. And they didn't go back, right? They didn't go back to the original, or did they?
No, they did. Yeah,
they did.
So, yeah, that's the danger of not recognizing the value of your brand equity. And again, there's a branding term. The value that you build up over time, as you establish a brand, stick with it, stay true to it, be authentic, and build up momentum. That's called brand equity. And when you make a big change like these we've been talking about, you're basically throwing your brand equity away, and that's just too dangerous.
Yeah. And when you and I start working with a new client that's going through the brand archetype process, they might have some brand equity if they've been in business a long time. People might recognize their name or their logo or something like that. But they definitely, if they've never used brand archetypes before or don't have an archetype, they don't have that emotional connection brand equity. So we always talk a lot with our clients in the beginning about what they want to change, what they don't want to change, what's working for them, what's not. And so it's not like we say, okay, you've got to change everything you're doing. We do always
consider it.
Yeah, exactly. Take in consideration what brand equity they have. You never want to just throw that away.
Right. So our next batch of brand fails would fall under the category of not doing enough research. So we've seen that changing your brand from your past strategy is a bad idea, but not figuring out what's going on in the real world enough can be very dangerous. So let me give a start here with the Sci-Fi Channel. So back in 2009, they decided that they were going to do a rebranding, and they wanted to be a little edgier and go after a younger demographic. And you know how young people will, you know, the changing spellings and, you know, like leet speak on the internet. So they decided to change the name of the channel from Sci-Fi, S-C-I-F-I, to Sci-Fi, S-Y-F-Y. So the simple spelling change was the cute little brand shift, but they just didn't consider the fact or find out through research that Sci-Fi, S-Y-F-Y is also slang for syphilis.
Oh, no.
Which is very, very bad for
your
brand.
Not something you ever want to be associated with
yeah.
in person or in your brand.
Or in your brand, right, yeah. Yeah, oh. So that was a painful discovery for them after
yes.
that. Yeah, yeah. And we got a few of these. So.
Yeah, another one's Burger King. So in Russia, the fast food chain actually, and we are not making this up, offered a lifetime supply of burgers and 3 million rubles to any woman who got pregnant from an international Russian soccer celebrity. I mean, like what could go wrong with this yeah. whole brand campaign?
When I'm reading about this, I was amazed that someone would even think that this is a good idea. There was actually belief that this was the right thing to do to kind of create and nurture the next generation of upcoming Russian soccer stars. That
Did they consult with these Russian celebrities to see if any of them were even on board with this?
I don't know. I don't know. Wow. It's yeah, it didn't go over very well,
no.
though.
But did it happen? Did anyone do
it? Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I know. I don't know if anybody did the actual give birth thing. Got the 3 million rubles. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah,
interesting. I thought when we were talking about this before the podcast and you were telling me about this, what I thought you were going to say is if they got pregnant while eating a burger or right after eating
Well, now that would be even better,
wouldn't it? That's where I thought it was going. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Okay, so our last one in this category is from the Pampers company. And so if you consider cultural shifts, if you go from one country to the next, there are obvious cultural differences, and a part of those differences is how we tell stories and the metaphors and the fables that we pass on from generation to generation. Well, we here in America, we understand that the symbol of a stork flying and delivering a baby to the new parents, that, you know, that's just a childhood story, right?
Right.
Well, it's definitely not universal. It's part of who we are as Americans. I'm not sure where else in the world, but when Pampers started doing their campaign in Japan, they launched with the stork, and no one actually asked the question of whether this would be understood in Japan, and it wasn't. Nobody had any idea of why is this big bird carrying babies around? They had no idea. So. Yeah.
That's funny. I wonder if there's any other symbols of animals that are used in culture for carrying. That's a weird, if you really think about it, that's really weird. Having a bird carry off your baby. Like, that's strange.
Yeah. Deliver it to you. Yeah. Right. Where is it coming from? That's all
right. Yeah. Another discussion.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some people that are just decided to go way off brand, take a left turn, pivot, do something that was just crazy. And again, we are with Burger King.
Now, doing the research, Burger King has actually made quite a few fails. I think it's because they're probably willing to be aggressive in trying things, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, when they say that Babe Ruth was not only the home run king, he was also the strikeout king.
Right.
He had more strikeouts in the year that he had the most home runs.
Good point. What would you say Burger King's archetype is then?
Definitely Jester.
Because they've got that crazy king. I was almost thinking, but the way that they treat their marketing could even be more like Outlaw or something.
Outlaw.
Jester's definitely there.
Yeah.
So as in with all fast food, one of the big challenges in marketing is to convey that any of your food is healthy or that people would want to eat it, you know, for health reasons. So where they are now crushing it with the introduction of the Impossible Burger, they had a campaign a few years ago that used the phrase "Satis Fries," a healthy fry with 40% less fat and 30% fewer calories. But people didn't buy it. They didn't buy it at all. Like, fries are really, I'm not sure how you could ever pass those over as being healthy.
I'm not going to go on the Burger King fries diet. Going to be right up there with South Beach.
Right. I mean, maybe sweet potato fries, but I don't think any fast food, at least in this country, is doing that. Sweet potato fries.
Yeah. So the Impossible Burger being plant based, you know, that's a big question on how healthy is it really? And I saw a really interesting video on the actual nutritional details and what is actually going into these new plant-based burgers and how healthy are they. And it was pretty fascinating. And I'm glad to see that there are a lot of chains that are trying this. And I know that the product itself is going to get a lot better, but Satis Fries, maybe not so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you and Francie being vegetarian, you being mostly vegetarian, have you tried the Burger King Impossible Burger?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Is it tasty? Well,
We love it. I actually like the there's Impossible and what's the other one? His reel in it, I think.
I don't know.
That's terrible. I can't remember the brand name. Anyway, I like the other one better, but it's pretty awesome. I actually like the taste of these products better than meat. I know it sounds strange.
Well, no, it doesn't, because you don't eat a lot of meat. But is it a lot of soy?
I think the their pea extract. There's actually cool. a couple of things, but the. I'll send you the video. It's really interesting. But healthiness in your product and having that be part of your brand and then really kind of missing the point is definitely a possibility of a brand fail, right?
Right. Well, healthy food at fast food is always going to be a challenge no matter which chain we're talking about. But to be fair, you know, you're not really always going to fast food to be healthy. You're going because you want the fast food. And that's okay, too.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely right.
All right. So let's talk about another one. Tell me about Volvo.
Yeah. This was a few years ago. And when I was doing the research on this bit, I couldn't find it. Yeah, but I remember hearing about it. So this one is – I'm throwing it out there without it actually being verified. When I originally saw it, the campaign was created in Australia, and they were portraying the Volvo as a new sexy car.
The Volvo.
Okay. Yeah, that boxy, you know, family
station
box.
Wagon.
Yeah. So if I remember it right, that they didn't launch it in the U.S. or in Europe, and that it kind of failed, died on the vine in Australia. And but again, in 2007, I did find that they did have another shift where they were introduced like fun people and the fun people that they the fun that people have in their cars with their family and friends. And so there was a kind of a nostalgia innocent shift away from safety, but that's more in line with the actual, you know, kind of, you know, I'm taking care of your family, kind of motherly, innocent brand, not going sexy, you know, not going with the lover archetype.
Right. And that's like knowing your products too. I mean, if your product isn't sexy, don't go with a sexy campaign.
Yeah.
No one's going to believe you.
Right. Yeah. And if you, despite the challenges that you face in your market going up against your competition, staying true to your archetype and the emotional connections that you've already established is way more important than trying to find a way to go up against your competitors.
Right.
Which is where most of these brand mistakes happen, is they feel pressure to make a change. Right.
Yep. If you're going to buy a Volvo, it's not because it's sexy. It's because of all these other reasons why you want a Volvo, and that's what they should stick to, right?
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So one more, also a vehicle of sorts. In the 1990s, Harley-Davidson, which is one of my favorite brands because it's another outlaw brand, they extended their brand to include perfume and aftershave. Just seems like a really far stretch from motorcycles.
Yeah, they can get away with the, you know, the leathers and the you know, the packing
the
gear.
The t-shirts and hats.
The traditional tchotchke, but, you know, let's kind of draw a line and say other consumer products might be off the mark.
I do have an interesting story. It's kind of related. So are you familiar with Young Living essential oils?
I'm not.
So it's just this whole kind of culture and product and brand of these essential oils that you use for different, either like they smell good or like lavender would help you calm down or different things like that. And Young Living is kind of the leading producer of these very organic things. And it's kind of like a multi-marketing thing. So you sell them, people under you sell them, that kind of stuff. They make like cleaning products that are all natural, no chemicals, bug sprays, things like that. It's all about being pure and all natural. Well, there's this guy, and it's mostly, as you can imagine, that's mostly marketed to women. But there's this man who is like this big biker dude. Like, he's just the epitome of what you imagine when you think of a biker dude.
Except he smells better.
Right, exactly. And he jumped on the whole Young Living bandwagon, and he sells all these essential oils to like all his biker friends, and because it's all natural and like whatever. And so Young Living created an exclusive line of products that only he can sell. Because he did it so well and he marketed it so well that that happened. And I'm repeating the story that I heard from somebody else, so I didn't actually like verify all the facts or whatever, but she's pretty high up in the Young Living company. Ellie. She was telling me about this. Yeah. So but I was like, wow, that's a really cool way to take a brand and run with it. So
all of this stuff that we've just been talking about, it falls into the bucket of brand extensions, extending your brand and expanding your product line and shifting from one industry to the next. And these brand extensions and brand expansions are very dangerous. There have been whole books written on how dangerous this is. So it's probably a topic of a future podcast of brand extensions. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's get onto the next category. How will the public react to your new idea? So let's start with McDonald's, one of our tried and true brands here. So McDonald's thought it would be a great idea to create a new hashtag with a whole Twitter, Instagram, Facebook hashtag, fervor. And the hashtag that they created was McD Stories, McDStories, hashtag McD Stories. And their hope was that the public would share awesome stories about the McDonald's brand and your experiences with the product and the restaurant and all the awesome times that you've ever had at a McDonald's restaurant.
Well, what could go wrong?
Okay, well, a new phrase was coined during this campaign called hash bashing as thousands of people piled on with their horrifying stories. And with something like this on the internet, man, if it builds momentum, you cannot stop this.
Right?
And it took a long time for the nightmare to subside.
Oh, yeah.
But people were sharing stories of, getting sick, and it was terrible. Terrible, terrible for the brand.
Yeah, right.
Very bad.
Well, yeah, that's a great example of not understanding how the public react. It's so hard these days because people are very reactionary, and with the internet and things like that, people
yeah.
can be much more outspoken than they would be in person. We all know that and have experienced it. But the flip side to that is that there's always something else more horrifying coming along soon. And so hopefully if you really screw up, it'll die down and people's attention will be, drawn to something else sooner than later.
So. Now, I know you have an example, and I would classify myself as an old guy. Here I'm in my late 50s, and even though I still think that I'm 20 and my brain thinks that I'm 20, I'm getting out there, long in the tooth, as old people say. And part of the challenge, I think, with a lot of these issues is there is a completely different psychology and a different way that younger people think. And with this whole internet thing, older people struggle to try to figure out how younger people think. And I think your next story is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm mid-40s, but I have young teenagers, so they keep me in the know on what the latest slang and stuff is and all that stuff. So, yeah, that helps. But so Instagram ran an ad asking users whether they would rather slap Rihanna or punch Chris Brown. What?
Yeah.
And the ad obviously was seen as being really insensitive to the issue of domestic abuse. So,
should, yeah.
What are you thinking?
Now, yeah. Do I get to answer it?
No, I mean, you can risk it.
I think I'll hold back on
that.
So let's just move on to the next one.
Yeah.
And this one, a lot of people have heard this one.
Because I love this one.
It's just so famous. The British government had a $285 million research vessel, and they thought it would be a great idea if they would throw the naming of this new vessel out to the public. And they had already had some straw man example names like, the Falcon, and, they had a whole list. Well, the winning name came back as Bodhi McBoatface.
I love it.
I think it's an awesome name.
I do too.
But it is definitely not what they were expecting.
I know.
And they tried to push back, but the public insisted. They said, listen, you're the one who threw it to us. and we want it to be Bodie McBoatface, and so that's the way it should be, and they had to kind of give in.
Yeah, I mean, I've
they did embrace it.
I've seen people put up auctions on eBay with, you know, people buying the rights to, like, name their unborn child and different things like that, and I was like, ooh, that's so dangerous.
Oh, like, that's very dangerous.
People are very creative.
Yeah. Let's get to our last category.
Yeah, the lost in translation category.
And I would say that we could probably have an entire episode of these.
Right.
I picked out a handful of classic ones. And,
you did. You picked out some good ones.
So the first one, Coca-Cola. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So when the brand Coca-Cola was first introduced to China, the name was translated to, well, depending on the dialect, either bite the wax tadpole or female horse stuffed with wax.
You know, it's really interesting. Francie and I actually refer to Coke as the bite the wax tadpole.
That's awesome.
That's how we've always referred to it.
And if you think, like, if a brand came out here in English and it was bite the wax tadpole, I wouldn't even begin to understand what the product was, let alone what that even meant, right? Like, crazy. Right. So awesome.
Right. Exactly right.
So tell us about the next one.
So Kentucky Fried Chicken. Oh, I'm sorry. KFC, because that is part of their rebranding. They are not Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore. When they launched in Beijing, they found that their famous tagline, finger licking good, was translated to eat your fingers off.
Eat your fingers off.
And not those are finger licking good.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah. Again, I'm thinking that Chinese must be especially difficult because your next one is from China as well, right?
Yeah, that's true. And now that we're such an international, global, everything is, you know, traded and sold everywhere. This is just such a bigger deal than it used to be. They have to really understand how things are translated in multiple languages. But here's Pepsi Cola again in China. Their tagline at the time, Pepsi brings you back to life, was translated as Pepsi brings your ancestors back from the grave.
Oh my God.
Seance and a Ouija board and your Pepsi.
It doesn't actually do that, but that's the brand promise.
Oh man.
This next one is one of my favorites. So now we're going to shift from China to, it was Mexico originally, but it was all Spanish speaking, nations when this launched. Parker Pens, the fountain pen company, they were the first company to create a pen design that didn't have a reservoir that would potentially leak ink. And so part of their kind of whole shtick was that it was a safer pen, that it wasn't going to leak and stain your clothes. And so they had a tagline, it won't leak in your pocket and embarrass you. Way long for a tagline, but that's another story. But the Spanish misinterpretation was, it won't leak in your pocket and make you pregnant.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yes, right. I know. I think that there was a story of brands about how it, you know, that they actually kind of ran with that a bit, and that it was the pen of choice of pregnant women worldwide. So
right.
it was really kind of funny that they tried to spin that. Yeah. But that's a tough one.
Oh my gosh. That is funny. Oh, the next one we have is the HSBC, and their 2009 tagline was assume nothing. But sadly, assume nothing, when translated into other languages, means do nothing. So that's not really, do nothing.
Yeah. Oh, yikes. Yeah. Yeah, we have another one of those coming up in the car names section. But let me cover one more from the Coors Company before we get into the car names. They had a tagline years back, turn it loose. I don't actually remember this one. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but I like its brevity. It's three syllables and all that. Turn it loose. Well, in Spanish slang, turn it loose gets defined or is interpreted as the unpleasantness of having diarrhea.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, not something you want to associate with your beer.
Yeah, especially if your tagline is promising to people. Yeah. Turn it loose.
This is going to give you diarrhea.
Yeah. Doggy.
Okay. Oh, man.
Okay, so let's talk some car names.
Oh, yeah, there's so many when it comes to car names. Yep. So Chevrolet, the car Nova, translates to no go in Spanish, not something you want your car to not do.
When I first heard that, I actually owned a Nova, and I thought I was very proud of that.
Your no-go Nova.
That's right. Mazda, they had La Puta, which also means prostitute in Spanish.
Oh. Yeah. The American Motor, they had the Matador, which translates to killer in Spanish.
Mitsubishi has, I believe it would be pronounced Pajero, P-A-J-E-R-O, which means jerk in Spanish. Obviously, I am not a Spanish speaker, but that's not good.
Right.
And they did change their name to Montero, so that's I guess that's a good thing.
Right, sure. All right.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they changed it just in Spanish-speaking companies or if they just completely canned the whole Pajero.
Okay.
Or Pajero, I don't know.
The last one in this, the car names we have is Mercedes-Benz is often referred to a Benzy. This is one of my favorite car brands. Mm-hmm. And Benzy means rush to die in Chinese.
Not good.
A car.
Yeah.
I was thinking about when we were reading this, I was thinking about this is slightly related, but we camp, right? We have an RV and we do a lot of camping. And I am often very surprised at the names on campers. Like there's one that's called the Intruder. Wow. Like it's a large camper and it's called the Intruder. And I'm like,
well, that's perfect for these like Winnebago.
I guess. I mean, because you're intruding into the silence of the woods with this huge camper, but it just seems negative. Like I'm like, I don't know how much thought they put into these names sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It's when you start getting into strange names, you know, in the whole pharmaceutical world, there's a whole nother podcast
that we
got to do.
That is true. Yeah.
So this was fun. This was definitely fun. So let's wrap up. If you have any questions, you can certainly give us a shout out by visiting us at brandarchetypes.com and contacting us there. Give us a call. Connect with us on our social platforms. All of that.
Yeah. Don't forget to do your research for your own brand. Think things through. Look at the translation in other countries if you're thinking about branching out to selling in other countries. Talk to lots of people. You can do focus groups. You can call us and ask us what we think. We always have opinions about brand. And just don't make huge or epic changes lightly. Just because something is new or fresh doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be better for your brand.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so next week, we have another special guest that we're interviewing, another co-client of mine and Amy's, and we will be talking about the development of their real-life brand strategy.
Yeah, I'm excited. She is a Michigan lawyer, and as we talked about before, lawyers, that industry tends to gravitate towards the guru archetype, and she picked something different, and it's working for her, so we're going to talk all about that.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
Talk to you next week, Amy.
Sounds good. Have a great week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.